Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Living with Emuna. So wonderful to see everyone, particularly those who drive from far and those who are near. It's really meaningful people come in person to learn, to grow, and to all improve and work on our Emuna muscles. An enormous thank you again to our anonymous donor, supporter of Rav David Abuchatzera, who supplied a copy of the Sefer We're Learning Shari Tefillah to all those who come in person. So if you did not remember to take one last week or weren't here last week, please take your copy, write your name in it, underline it, mark it up. Even if you're a guest and visiting, even if you just came to our cold to escape your cold and you want to take a Sefer, please take one. It's our pleasure. As always, want to begin with our attitude of gratitude and express thanks to our generous series sponsors. First of all, Avi and Bella Morgan, in memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit, in memory of Bella's mother, our learning Shabbat Lili Nishmas, Dr. Ellen Shanzer. We're so grateful for their generosity. Also, the other series sponsor, anonymously, in memory of the 30 fallen soldiers and alumni of B'nai David Mechina and Yeshiva in Eli. Horrific, hard to believe, this one yeshiva lost 40 soldiers and alumni. October 7th and the war since. This week we're highlighting Sergeant Dvir Lisha, Hashem Yikom Damo, 21, a Golani soldier from Nitzan. He was killed on October 7th, fighting Hamas in the Zikim Beach. Dvir, in a selfless act of bravery, rushed forward to engage the terrorist, which allowed civilians to escape. There's footage that shows him before he fell, bravely running towards the terrorist, firing his weapon. He survived by his parents, Nava and Nissan, and his seven siblings. They should find only comfort and strength. This morning's shir is sponsored anonymously in honor of Anua's granddaughter, or Kayla Emuna. I think that was me last week. Unless someone else just had a granddaughter named Kayla Emuna. But that'd be very hard to believe. By Elaine Trachtenberg, Andrea and Alan Lieber, and Dvoran Hillel Lefkowitz on the 12th year at site. 19th of Cheshvan, and Dr. Howard Trachtenberg, our beloved member. We miss him, and we're grateful to him. And Yibad L'Chaim to Elaine for their role in our community. Chaim Tzvi Hirsch ben Binyamin, who was a beloved husband, father, and grandfather. For Simcha Yaakov ben Aliza Bracha to have a tzlacha in his learning and enjoy his learning. And for an anonymous to have a full refuah shlema, Ayelet Strauss and Amanda Melman, in honor of the upcoming wedding of Ayelet Berkowitz and Yossi Mandelbaum, Mazel Tov. May they build a bias nama b'Yisrael and continue to be an example of what it means living with Emuna. And our learning this morning should be a schus for Yaakov Yisrael ben Sarah Elka. Okay, we begin as we always do with some Emuna emails that have come in. Baruch Hashem, I feel so blessed to receive so many. I read each and every one of them, and I hope the exercise of writing them is valuable in growing Emuna, capturing Emuna. So please continue to do so, even if I'm unable to read them all. But let's start with this week's Kapitel Chav Gimel sighting. We studied Mizmor Hashem, Mizmor David Hashem Roi Lo Achzar a couple weeks ago, and last week we spoke about Kapitel, chapter, Psalm 23. Hashem is my shepherd, I shall not lack. What I want to not lack, we learned, is let me never be lacking in knowing He's my shepherd. So we saw the picture of the person wearing the tank top with the number and the said Psalm number 23. That was their Psalm. And then last week we had another sighting on a license plate. And here's the latest email. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, since your past few Emunah Shiurim have featured people seeing Perek, Tehillim Perek, Chav Gimel in various different places, I felt I couldn't not share my experience from this morning. I got on the subway for work this morning like any other day, happy I found a seat next to a woman who wouldn't have to stand. Except that today a man entered the same subway car as me, blasting and singing along to music that was not friendly, nor was it appropriate for the children sitting in the subway with their parents. And if the music wasn't enough, anyone who made eye contact with him got an earful of words that were not very friendly either. My immediate thoughts were, wow, this is so not what I need at 8 a.m. I was frustrated for myself that this was the way my morning was beginning, as well as for parents that had to stand there covering their children's ears to shield them from this man. But as you always say, I was where I was meant to be. My frustration lapsed and I smiled when all of a sudden I looked at the lady sitting next to me, and lo and behold, through the loudness and chaos of this morning's subway ride, she was sitting there reciting Tehillim in Spanish. And what parak was she reading at the moment? Salmos 23. Translation, Psalm 23. At first, I just thought it was a cute coincidence. Psalm 23 has recently been a consistent theme in this Emunah Shir. But of course, the real theme of the Emunah Shir is there are no coincidences. So I began to consider what this moment could teach me as my day proceeded to become even more hectic. I ended up having a crazy day of delays and chaos. I witnessed a car accident. Baruch Hashem, everyone's okay. Throughout the entire day, I kept thinking, wow, this has to be one of the worst days ever. And it all started with that horrible subway ride. Now that I've had time to reflect, I think Hashem may have been preemptively sending me this small reminder that through all the chaos, He will guide me and be with me. It's definitely that little wink from Hashem this morning that gave me the strength to still smile through my subway ride back home, despite the fact that it was a half an hour later than I usually go home, colder and darker than it's been last winter. So, thank you, Rabbi Gover, for providing me with the outlet to help me cultivate the most beautiful outlook on life, and has led me to view every event in my life as an opportunity to find Hashem leading me through it. That was this week's sighting of Salmos 23. So keep your eyes open, whether you're here in person or watching online, because I want to find out where it will come up next. Where will Hashem wink and nod to all of us in the Amun Ashir and show us that Psalm 23. Rabbi Goldberg, thank you for the Ashirim. Thank you for the compliments. I love listening to the Amun Ashir on my way to work, as I did this morning. Especially love listening to the Amun stories, and sometimes wish I had one to send on my own. Well, today I had one. I was driving home this evening from work in the Bell Parkway. As I was driving, I noticed the screen on the dashboard of the car flashing. Low tire pressure in the front passenger tire. My original thought was, I had a long day. Flat tires usually go down slowly. I prefer getting to Brooklyn, going to a tire shop I know of locally. After all, I wasn't even feeling anything abnormal in the drive. I only 3 miles to go until my exit. But the screen was telling me the pressure was going down faster than I'd expected. I decided I'd call my brother and ask for a more objective opinion. Despite him being on a train going home from work himself, he answered with a warning he'll lose service any minute. I quickly told him the story. He suggested I get off the highway, take a look at the tire myself. He suggested at the very least I should drive home on the streets, not the highway. I exited and watched how the tire pressure went down. 16 PSI, 11, 8, 6, 5, and to 1 within those 5 minutes. By the way, been there, done that. I think Yocheved wrote an article about it in Mishpacha magazine. Happened to us on the side of a road during COVID in North Carolina, driving a Sprinter van. I pulled over and looked at the tire, which was completely flat. I quickly Googled and searched for a local tire shop. There just happened to be a shop 0.3 miles away that was closing at 7. It was 6:30 p.m. I drove rather slowly to the shop, got my tire replaced, was back on the road within 20 minutes. There are so many aspects of Ashkacha to this story. The car wasn't even beeping to alarm me of the low pressure. I could have easily gone on a few more minutes without noticing it. If I went with my initial thought of driving, I would have been driving 50 miles an hour plus with a potentially full flat tire that went at within minutes, which could have been extremely dangerous. Finally, the Hashkacha being a tire shop 2 blocks away from the exit, I was able to go minutes before closing. What a hug from Hashem. I am no stranger to moments of questioning, where is Hashem? But sometimes it's the small things that really aren't so small, where we need to realize we are where we're meant to be. Perhaps it could be an inspiration for the bigger, more challenging moments to feel strengthened that it too is from Hashem. I'm speaking to myself. Thank you again for all the inspiration. Okay, next email. I don't know, it's anonymous who wrote it, but I love the heading of it. Subject line, love you or hate you, ? Hi, Rabbi Goldberg. Should I love you or hate you? I was nervous it was from Yocheved. Depending on the day, you never know. Should I love you or hate you? I've been pondering that question, and by the end of this note, perhaps the answer will reveal itself. Okay, you had me at hello. You see, I'm a cynic. I tend to believe that people are driven not by goodness, but by something less pure. And yet, your Living with Amun Ashir from a few weeks ago has been echoing in my mind. You spoke about people's reaction to others' pain, the woman who said she cried for the man in such pain turning away from God, and the men who reached out wanting to invite that lonely Balas Tshuva for Shabbos. I find myself drawn to the stories where hardship meets faith, where things don't turn out perfectly, but Emunah endures. I often roll my eyes at the happy endings, the aha moments where everything resolves neatly, and the refrain becomes, God was there for me. Of course we thank Hashem when things end well. What about when they don't? People who cling to faith despite their suffering, that's the kind of truth that moves me deeply. This week you spoke about David HaMelech's words, Gam ki elech begeit tzal, mavis lo ira ra. Years ago when I worked on Wall Street, my sister gave me a CD. Yes, a real CD. Anyone not know what that is? Looks like a donut, it's got a hole in the middle, it spins, and you listen to music. It was music by Dr. Rabbi Eli Kranzler. I remember sitting on the command bus, hearing those very words sung for the first time. The melody, the message, I didn't even know what the translation then, but appeared straight to my soul. Tears streamed down my face and I didn't even understand why. I was embarrassed as people looked at me strangely, but I embraced the tears, welcoming the emotion since I often felt numb. And here I felt deeply. Listening to your shir now, I finally grasp what those words truly mean. I do live with fear of Hashem. How could I not, after a lifetime filled with challenges, grief, and weighty moments that test the human spirit? I'm not exaggerating. My story would make you cry. But for the purpose of this email, I made a decision. I choose to love you. Perhaps next week I'll feel differently. No offense. None taken. I love you for reminding me of Gam Ki Elech Begeitz Al Mavas. I love you for reminding me that good people still exist. I love you for honoring the authenticity of those whose stories don't have a perfect ending. And most of all, I love you for being engaging. Normally, the idea of listening to a shir makes me shudder. Truly, I've been grown disenchanted. Yet you somehow have managed to hold my attention even as I walk and listen, headphones in, trying to internalize the message, believe in Hashem. So thank you for keeping me listening, for rekindling a small dose of emunah. Here's to the next Living with Emunah shir. I can't wait. So, it's nice, at least for today, to feel loved. All right, at least for today to feel loved. Okay. There's so many more. And they're so good and powerful. The bicycle. But we've got Torah to learn. This is a powerful, painful one. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, your podcast number 363 was the week I was sitting Shiva for my beloved husband. Because of all the wonderful supportive friends who were flooding our house, I had not listened to the podcast for the week. That is, until my daughter excitedly contacted me telling me I had to find time to listen, and I understood immediately. My husband's trademark in learning and davening was to write in small print with a mechanical pencil meticulous notes in the margins of all of his farm. You remember last week when I told you the great gift? And I encouraged you, don't leave it here, don't give it back to me, take it and make it your own. Toras Hashem Chavtso V'sora So Yege Yomam V'Laila, the opening capital of Tehillim. David HaMelech says the Torah belongs to God, but when you underline it and highlight it and write in it and mark it up and put the English translations over it, you make it your own. Break the binding. Make it fall apart. Fill it up with your notes. That's what I spoke about last week. So she writes, my husband, who she just lost and was sitting Shiva for, his trademark in learning and davening was to write small print. When his sitter began to show signs of age, because of all the notations, he realized he could not simply buy a new sitter. He got boxing tape to patch up the well-used one, which now is a treasured legacy for the children and grandchildren. Knowing there's no such thing as a coincidence, I found it wonderful, Ashkacha Pratis, that you would discuss this particular thing on the week of his Levaya. I'm enclosing a few pictures of his sitter, which were very beautiful, and we wish her and her family only nechama, strength, and comfort through the terrible loss. I want to tell you the wink and nod she doesn't even know. I sometimes find myself speaking, I don't know why I'm talking about that. Like last week, why did I go on that rant about marking up your safer? It's not the most important thing in the world to me. I don't know if I've ever thought about it before. I certainly didn't sit down and work on the shir and say, this week I'm going to talk about the importance of writing in the margins and underlining your safer and making it your own. I don't know. It just came to me. So it's equally a wink and nod from Hashem to me. It's equally a hug from above to me. When sometimes you just find yourself thinking about, talking about things, you're not sure why, and you later find out when someone takes the time to write you that email, and it is a very beautiful thing. Okay, one more and then we dive in. I was laughing so hard I decided I must send you an email. My family has a unique position of being totally bicycle dependent. We live in a city in the north, this is Israel, where Baruch Hashem, they have excellent bicycle infrastructure, but not so great public transportation. After we moved, we decided instead of stretching ourselves to buy a car, we got me an electric bicycle. My husband is a biking enthusiast, has always gotten around by bicycle. I absolutely love my bike and get everywhere around the city with it. I have 3 children, 5 years through 6 months, and they come along with me. I have enough room on my bike for 4 kids. Wow, superwoman. Anyway, my husband was home for a short visit during round 4 of Miluim, which we can pause right there. Just astounding, mind-boggling, and just said passively, these are our heroes. She just says passively, my husband was home for a short visit during his 4th round of Miluim. Just extraordinary. Sorry. Yeah. And the bike was working just fine. The morning after he headed back to his base, my bike died. Not a flat tire, which also happened to me twice, but something with the motor. I called him right away, no answer. Called my brother-in-law, who answered, you're doomed, and hopped into a cab with my 3 kids for a doctor appointment across the city where we were going to be late. Once I got through to my husband, he listened to the symptoms and agreed with our brother-in-law it was probably the gears in the motor. He express shipped gears to arrive the next week when he was supposed to come home again. I managed without a bike for that week. It was tough, but okay. Unfortunately, when he got home, opened the motor, he found the issue wasn't the gears. He didn't know what to do. So he started calling around for a bike place that had time to work on it ASAP. We found someone close by, even offered to grab it from us as he passed by on the way home. That was Wednesday. Here we are Friday morning. He still hasn't started working on the bike, and my husband will be away again for his last 2 days of Miluim, this round Monday and Tuesday. So as I'm listening to your show this morning while cooking, I paused to fetch and fret to my husband about the bike, and then I stopped. How ridiculous is that? I'm not supposed to have my bike right now. It's where it's supposed to be. Why should I be fretting? I have no control over the situation, and bothering my husband about it won't get the mechanic to work any faster. Emir Hashem will hear Besuras Tovas about it very soon. I'm sure I'm allowed to say that about something mundane like a bike, especially if I'm always hearing about flights. Thank you for the wonderful shir. Good Shabbos, someone from the north of Israel. You gotta love that somebody whose husband is on his fourth, fifth round of Miluim is worried instead about the bicycle and getting around, but also has the attitude and the clarity to be able to say, my bike is where it's meant to be. And this is what we've been learning. This is what I'm encouraging. This is what I'm personally working on all the time. When we start to worry, get anxious, get angry, get resentful, get envious of others, to take that deep breath, to ground and center ourselves, and to remember we and our things and our solutions and our future spouse, they are all where they are meant to be. And when we are meant to have them, we will. We have to keep reinforcing and keep remembering. Nothing is random. Nothing is coincidence. Nothing is chance. It's all from above. Hashem wrote the play. We're just actors on the stage. And yes, we have free will. And yes, it's up to us to express initiative. But once we do, then the rest of the scene plays itself out. And that, let go and let God, surrender. And the serenity that comes with it by realizing, I'll get the bike when I'm supposed to. The package will be delivered when it's supposed to. I'll meet that person when I'm supposed to. The answer will come when it's meant to come. And then we can let go. And then everything falls into place. From a bicycle to Miluim, to travel in an airplane, and to everything in between. It is all orchestrated from above. And when that happens, we can become. I shared with you last week the great expression I saw from the Rebbe. I want to blow it up and put it in our incredible Reb Shaila Cafe with the other inspirational quotes we're going to be putting there. But the Bavitcher Rebbe, I got a couple emails about it too. Got to put it on sweatshirts and bumper stickers. Don't be a worrier, be a warrior. Channel the energy of being a worrier instead into being a warrior. Whatever you're worried about, go be a warrior to make it happen. Whatever the case may be, for Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, for the Jewish people and the challenges we face, for yourself, for your family, don't be a worrier, be a warrior. Take that same energy and channel it into a positive action and outcome. We are on page Kuf Chavav, 126 in your very own. Please mark it up and underline. There are plenty more copies. Give them out. Anyone who needs, please come and take, write your name in and keep. Please bring it back. We're in the bottom of the right-hand column. V'chein Isa be'imrei Noam. This chapter that we're learning from the David Avuchatzera is all about, very counterintuitively, the value of davening for Emuna. What I'm missing is Emuna and Hashem. I'm supposed to ask Hashem to have more faith in Him. The answer is yes, absolutely. Even success in faith, even the ability to see and feel Him, depends on our davening, depends on our talking to Him. V'chein Isa be'imrei Noam, v'nevi'o b'lashono. The great Imrei Noam brings the following. We have a tefillah. We say it on Friday nights. When do we say it? Right before Lichadoti. And that tefillah is called Ana B'Koach. Who wrote Ana B'Koach? Tradition has it that Ana B'Koach, this beautiful paragraph, we forgot to post it in the WhatsApp group. Miami Boys Choir? Couldn't find a good version? Ana B'Koach. This beautiful song was written not by Yerachmiel Begun, a Miami Boys Choir. It was written by the great Tana, Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana, the great Tana, wrote it. It has 42 words, the initials of which form the secret 42 letter of the name of Hashem. The six initials of each of its seven verses form divine names. The Kabbalists teach that it should be divided into phrases of two words each, but our translation, Art Scroll writes, follows the division indicated by a simple reading of the phrase. So you're familiar with Ana B'Koach. If you look before Lichadodi on Friday night, you have Ana B'Koach, And there's these mystical acronym Rashi Tevos on the side of Ana B'Koach, the way it's divided. Let me read that to you again. The great Tana, the great 2nd century, 3rd century Tana, Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana wrote it. It contains 42 words. The initials of the 42 words form the secret 42-letter name of Hashem. I guess if Arts Girl published it, it's not such a secret anymore. The 6 initials of each of its 7 verses form divine names. It should be divided into phrases of 2 words each. And the Arts Girl translation follows the divine division indicated by a simple reading of the phrase. So, this tefillah of Rabbi Nechunya. Ana b'koach, gedulas yemincha, tatir serura. What do these words mean? I'm just turning the air conditioning off since it is freezing cold outside. I don't know why it's blowing in here. Sorry, 1 second. Ana b'koach, this opening line means, we beg you, with the strength of your right hand's greatness, unite the bundled sins. Ana b'koach, we beg you, b'koach, with your strength, gedulas yemincha, the great strength of your right hand, tatir tsurura, untie the bundled sins. That is a very esoteric, ambiguous. What does that mean? No wonder. I'm raising the temperature in another room. That's why. Okay. There you go. Sorry. Ana b'koach gedulas yemincha tatir tsurura. Haynu kiksiv. The pasuk in Eicha says, ki el mipi elyon lo seitzei haraos. From the mouth of God above, no evil goes out. V'chol adinim hei maleim chasadim b'korum uvepnimiyosam. All dinim, all strict justice, are actually filled with kindness in their inner core. Rak bezgalos leinei basanira ki ilohim dinim chas v'sholom. We live in a world where from our limited finite perspective, we sometimes experience things as strict justice. Why did that diagnosis come in? Why that news? Why that event? Why this crisis? Why that result? Why that outcome? It feels like painful, strict justice. But inside every act or experience of justice is a loving kindness from Hashem. Ach anu mevakshim ki ein banu koach lizbol hadinim. But we turn to Hashem and we say, but Hashem, we know komanda v'rachman alatav avid. All that you do is by definition good. We know that. But we want it to also feel good. As we shared last week, that the Rebbe taught, Shana Tova umesuka. Let it be not only a good year, but a year that's good and sweet. By definition, if it's good, if it's from you, it's good. But good can be bitter or good can be sweet. And we ask for and we want and long for a good that is sweet. Because ein banu koach lizbol adinim. We don't have the strength. We don't have the strength to endure the dinim. V'yakein hareinu Hashem chasdecha. We dive into Tehillim, Kapitel Pehei. Hareinu Hashem, show us chasdecha. Just show us and shower us with love and kindness. Shagam le'einenu yemalei chasadam b'lishum tarov es din klal. Let it be not only something which is kind by definition and good by default, but let us see it. Let us experience it in that way too. B'zehu, and that's the meaning. Ana b'koach gedulas yemincha. Hainu, shekol ha'inyanim shein b'koach u'gvura. All things that come from your might and your strength. U'bepnimiya shalamein b'bechinas yamin, shu chesed. And their inner essence, they're coming from the right. The right is always chesed. I mentioned last week. The reason we give preference and precedence to the right over the left is chesed over din. The left side is din, the right side is chesed. That's why the kittel and the kapata and the bekasha and the chasidim, even the shirt, they button right over left. The right hand over the left hand. Everything is right over left, chesed over din. So even though gedulas yemincha, your right hand, it's chesed, b'koach, everything coming through your power, gedulas yemincha, we know underneath it all is loving kindness. And even though from our perspective it feels like it looks like din, justice, im kol zeh tsarur v'tsafun b'socho koach ha-chesed shu kulo tov. Hidden and embedded and inside of it is loving kindness, which is all good. V'yach anu mevakshim tatir tsarura, shetiftach hatsor b'socho shem ha-chesedim, unbundle and untie the loving kindness and the goodness. Let us see it. Let it be visible. Don't make us have to search for it and find it. Don't make us have to wait for it to one day come. Untie it and unbundle it. Let us see it. Let us find it. Shagam le'enei abasar yeirau shehu akol b'chesed. Even to the eyes, even to the naked eye, even to the mere mortal, let us see it and experience it. In other words, our lives are by definition good. Everything that comes from Hashem is by definition good. But there's a good which is painful, and there's a good which is pleasant. So we ask Hashem, we turn to Hashem and we say, let all the good not only be definitionally good, but let it be experientially good. Let us see the good, unbundle, untie. Let us see, let us feel, let us access, let us know the good even within the chesed shebedin. Let us see the kindness even within that which feels like justice. We have, once a month we meet a Kaddish club. It's a club nobody wants to ever be part of. But those who are in their period of mourning, and nobody's ever kicked out of the group, there are people who stay long beyond the year, people who come on again when they have a yahrzeit. We get together, we learn a piece of Torah connected to grief, mourning, loss. And then we open it up for people to share and to emote and to be among others who are going through a difficult time. So in a recent meeting of our Kaddish group, one of the people shared about the loss of her brother and how painful it was, but how much good has come since then. She's not grateful for it. She wishes she could undo it and have him back. Of course, she's not grateful he's gone, but she's able to look back and reflect on all the lessons she's learned and all the ways she's grown and all the manners in which she has stepped up since she lost her brother. And I was wowed, because many people, they stew in their grief and their sense of mourning, and woe is me, and why, and where are you, unable to see or find any good. But there is good, there is good. It's not a good, again, that we welcome or want, we long for and we ask. Give us a good without needing to get there through what feels like bad or painful. But under that din is a chesed. How lucky and fortunate we are we can find it and name it and see it and be grateful for it. But the real tefillah is to not have to have the chesed laced in din, but to have it be just revealed and exposed and direct. The Kodarash Rebbe HaKadosh Reb Chaim Tzanz, the great Divrei Chaim, the great Reb Chaim Tzanzer, also, mitfiloso shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, who also had a tough and difficult life. Moshe Rabbeinu, true, he grew up in a palace, but he was on the run, fleeing for his life to Midian. He came back and he became a spokesperson for this incorrigible, infuriating Jewish people who failed him time and again. He didn't get to see his dream realized of going into the land of Israel. His leadership role and the sacrifice he made in fulfilling it impacted negatively his marriage, but also, in a sense, cost him his children, because many here don't even know Moshe Rabbeinu's children's names. Can you name the children of Moshe? The name, the children of Moshe, who did not succeed him. They did not take over the Rabbeinu status, the Rabbeinu role. There's a lot that Moshe, and all he wanted to was to see his dream fulfilled, escort the Jewish people into the land of Israel. And he davened. How many times did he daven? Not once, not twice, not 50, and not 100. How many times did Moshe daven? Ve'eschanan al Hashem ve'isahi le'mor. The beginning of Parshas ve'eschanan, Dvarim Perek Gimel. 515 times. 515 times. Over and over and over and over and over and over again. You know, it leaves us confused because sometimes we wonder, should we let it go because Hashem was saying no? He closed that door. He said, that's not what's best for you. Or did he want us to get up to 515? Ask over and over and again and again. Ebrenav Eres HaTova. He asked, please let me in. Let me see. Let me feel. I'll be emeritus. I'll be retired. I don't have to be active. Yeshua can succeed me, but let me realize and fulfill my dream of entering the land. It's what I live for. This is what I was leading for. 515 times. How do we know 515? That's the gematria of Veschanon. V'amar Levar said the Sanzer, Shabakashos Moshe Rabbeinu, I saw Shaf Shabavadai Gamma Gzera Shalikan Sarat Israel, Tovas Lo Tovas Israel. Now, why didn't Moshe? This relates to what I wrote about last week and what I spoke about. I'm waiting to get permission from people to read their emails, I cannot tell you the outpouring of reaction and response we've spoken about here, and I wrote about last week because I shared the letter I got before Rosh Hashanah, giving license and permission to sometimes protest or feel angry at Hashem. And I can't tell you how many people who reached out and said how much that meant to them, because that's where they are and that's how they feel, and they felt like a lost cause. They felt rejected and they had no place. One person wrote after 7 months they went back to shul because they read the letter from the person who wrote me and the response. So far they only made it to the Kiddush, not into the davening. But I want to tell you that that's also a big deal. That's a big deal. I know somebody who, because of abuse he experienced in his youth from a person of Torah authority, who has such trauma and so many triggers related, and now he has a family and desperately wants his children to not suffer from them and to be able to live a richly Jewish life. So he comes to shul because he wants them to, and he told me, I can't make it past the lobby. When I enter past the threshold and I come into the shul, my body reacts, it shuts down. I can't breathe, my chest tightens, and it's hard to even be there. We don't know what that means, and there are many more people who experience that than we want to know, or maybe than we would believe. But they're not lost causes. In many ways, as we've talked about, their relationship with Hashem is more real because it's more raw. It's authentic. It's genuine. How many walk right past that threshold, enter right in, and haven't had a real conversation with Hashem in many years or in all the years of their life? They wrap those tefillin, they put on the talis, they open the siddur, they say the tefillah, they extra tehillim, and yet they've never had a real conversation. They're not in a raw, real relationship. So some of those people, it's real. It's real. It's real. And I hope I'll be able to share some of their emails because they touched me very deeply, just like the original letter writer did. So here, the great Sanzor, Reb Chaim Sanz, the Divrei Chaim, he points out, why didn't Moshe say, if Hashem said, no, I can't enter Israel, that's what's best for me, so I'll leave it alone. Why did he come back and ask again and again and over and over? L'tzlotova so, it was good for him. L'tova Yisrael, it was the right thing for the Jewish people. Moshe Emin Bekach, Leloshim Safek. Moshe had unbelievable, unconditional, unequivocal faith. Moshe had maybe the most perfect faith. Moshe certainly believed in Hashem and believed that everything Hashem did and determined was for his best and the Jewish people's best. So leave it, drop it, move on. You asked, Hashem said no. Okay, weiter. Ach, af apichein hischani l'kodesh baruch hu. Nevertheless, Moshe said, please, pretty please with the cherry on top, pretty please. Can't I, won't you, it's the last time, I'll never ask you, please, can I? 515 different ways. He mutchered, and he bothered, and he came after, and he drove Hashem crazy. Ebra naveres haaretz hatova. Shiyu achasadim megulam venirin le'enkol. What was Moshe saying? What was Moshe davening? Says the Divrei Chaim Sanzer, Moshe was saying, I know that the no is the best and what's right for me and the Jewish people. But can't you make a right and best for me and the Jewish people that includes me going into the land? If the answer is no, I accept it. I surrender and I submit. But I'm asking, can't you pivot and adjust and make a what's right for me also with what feels good for me? I thought I was going to get a hard time on that article or our shir, this concept of being able to and being allowed to, having a license to protest or even be angry at God. I didn't get any pushback. I think we brought lots of rias, lots of evidence. Avram and Sdom, Eov, Yonah, Yirmiyahu. Yesterday in the Parsha Shir, the Holy Eish Kodesh, the Piezetz Nereba, talked about how Sarah ended her life, so to say, she died in protest to Hashem when she heard that Yitzchak was sacrificed, even though he wasn't, in protest to Hashem. This is in November 1939, when 2 months earlier, his only son was murdered by the Nazis, as was his daughter-in-law, and as was his sister-in-law. He lost so much of his family. Piezetz, the Rebbe, gave this drush on the Warsaw Ghetto, and he said, Sarah's life ended in protest to Hashem. I don't want to live if you cause so much suffering. Hashem, you must stop the suffering. It's too much to bear. You're a loving God. If the Piezetzner could say that about Sarah, that sometimes we can protest to Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not just take it Moshe Rabbeinu turned back to Hashem and he said, I get it. And I know with unconditional and unequivocal faith, I know it's all from you. And I surrender. I submit. If this is the answer ultimately, I'm all in. This is what's right. But would you reconsider changing what's right? If you think about it, that's what all davening is. We're finite and we're mere mortals. I don't think we've ever spoken this out. So let's do it right now for a moment. Hashem is infinite and omnipotent. He's all-knowing and all-seeing. I'm mere mortal and I'm finite. Like, there's someone I sometimes get a ride with, a drive with, who for some reason has this aversion to using Waze or Google Maps. And whenever we go, he says, I know how to go. I know the shortcut. I know where to get on. I know the express lanes. I say, you can't see around buildings. You can't see around corners. You can't see 5 miles in advance. You don't know where an accident happened, where traffic built up, or where the police are hiding. Why in the world would you follow your limited intuition of how to go instead of the satellite in the sky that sees further and better, more accurately, more precisely, and tells you and knows exactly where to go? Why in the world? And I struggle and I debate and I argue with him each and every time. Each and every time. One of my favorite stories. A couple summers ago, my daughter had a baby in New York and I was going with my mother-in-law to go see and meet this baby. I was at a hospital on the North Shore and I was following Waze and it was taking me a different direction she was used to. She kept criticizing, she's not as used to using Waze. It's not a criticism. I love her with all my heart. And she said, why are you going this way? I said, Ma, it's Waze. There's a satellite. It knows traffic. It's telling us. So she protested by saying, Waze is not from the neighborhood. Waze doesn't know how to go. Waze is not from our neighborhood. Okay, it's a little generational thing there. Waze is from every neighborhood. Waze is from every neighborhood. Waze knows how to go. Waze knows how to go. I'm only slightly exaggerating. Every time I turn the car on, I put on Waze. Almost from my house to shul, I'm exaggerating on the circle. But I'm telling you the truth that if I'm off the circle, when you have to drive carpool, whichever direction you're coming off the circle to drive carpool, put on Waze. You don't know better where traffic's built up, where an accident happened, where police are hiding, where a light is out. You don't know. Put it on. It knows better. So stop this ego game. Stop. It takes 3 seconds. Put it on. And it's going to tell you. Again, now I'm going to get emails. Google Maps is better than Waze. Waze is better than there's an age-old debate, whichever one you want to use. But use something relying on a satellite in the sky. Why am I ranting about that? Because I have a perspective on life. I have a perspective on when I should get married and if I should be healthy and how much money I should make and what an outcome from an election should be. That's my perspective. Then there's a satellite in the sky known as the Ribono Shel Olam, the Almighty. He's not only from every neighborhood. He created every neighborhood. He runs every neighborhood. He knows everything about every neighborhood. He's in charge. He's in control. And he has another perspective about when I should get married and if I should be healthy and how much money I should make and if I should have children and who should win which election. And now there's a conflict. His perspective, his determination, his decision, and mine. He's infinite, I'm finite. He's omnipotent, I'm limited. He's perfect, and Yocheved tells me I'm not. So, who should surrender to whom? Who should surrender to whom? Only because we have such an amazing marriage can I make these jokes. Who should surrender to whom? Should I give in to God and do it His way, or should I really be busy protesting, appealing, talking to him, and trying to force him to conform? Who should conform? Who should conform? Should I conform to him or should he conform to me? Isn't it logical and obvious to say he's infinite and omnipotent, he's up in the sky and all-knowing, everything he does is good by definition and for the best? So enough, Goldberg. Stop davening and asking. Stop controlling and manipulating. Let go and let God. He's in charge and in control. Close the sitter. Close the Tehillim, close the conversation. Whatever happens, passively accept it's coming from God. That question bothered me when I was younger. That question about, not like high school younger, post-high school younger. That question bothered me. Why are we davening? What are we asking for? Why am I trying to change God's mind when if it's a choice between His mind or my mind, we should go with His mind every time? Do you ever think about that question? Has that question ever bothered you? Does the question bother you now that we've asked it? Is this thing on? Is anybody listening?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So, the Alshech, others, the Akedah, they all have the following. How do you say to pray in Hebrew? Hispalel. What form of the verb is hispalel, to daven, to pray? It's hitpael, it's the reflexive form. What am I trying to change when I daven? Am I trying to change God's mind? No. I'm not trying to change God's mind. What I'm trying to change is myself. Why? Because the determination God had for what's best and what's right and what's good was for the me before I davened. But when I daven and I change and I transform myself, what I'm saying is it's a new me. So let's come up with a new what's best for me. So what you had discerned was best for me was true for the old me. You did it maybe to even get my attention. Well, you got it. And here I am. And now, through the exercise in humility and dependence and faith and surrender, through the closeness I've created with you, I'm a new me. And now that I'm a new me, how about you come out with a new decision of what's best for me? Person comes before a judge, and the judge says, I look at your record, I've examined all the evidence, I'm locking you up, I'm putting you in this program, I'm making you pay this fine, you have to volunteer this service. And the person then says, Judge, may I approach the bench? Can I speak from my heart? And wins over favor with the judge and convinces the judge that the person who stands before him or her is not the person who did all those things, is not the person who all the evidence points to the crime. They're a different person. I see you've worked on yourself. I see through the way that you presented yourself, you're a new you. So you know what? It's true that that was my decision, that was my judgment, but I hear you, and I hear that you're different, and I see that you're different and transformed, and therefore, tell you what, this is my new determination. This is my new decision. This is what I'm going to do for you now. I was once in court testifying for someone on behalf. Well, that happened. The judge was sentencing, and the judge heard the argument. I happened to speak on that person's behalf, but much more importantly, heard the person himself. And the judge said, I want you to know, Mr. So-and-so, when I walked in this morning, I already made the decision. I was going to sentence you to such and such. But having heard you, I believe you. I find you compelling and persuasive. And I hear the people who spoke for you. Unfortunately, I've done this several times for several people, and I've never seen that before. Usually, whatever the decision was before they walked in the court was the sentencing that was handed down no matter what was said. But here he heard something. He saw something and he said, I was going to put you in jail today from this hearing. But instead I've decided such and such. Every time we daven, we're turning to Hashem, his palel hit pael. We're not trying to change his mind. The act and the process, the exercise of prayer is to change ourselves. And to say, to make the argument, Hashem, what you had determined, what you decided was best for me, that was the old me. That was the last me. But now through this experience, through this process, through this tefillah, there's a new me. So would you reconsider maybe what the new me should get? That's what the Divrei Chaim is saying. Not in so many words, but that's what's underlying what the Divrei Chaim is saying. The Divrei Chaim, the Sanzer, is saying, Moshe is telling Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, if you think I shouldn't go into the land of Israel, that's best. That's right. That's just. It's good. It's good for me. It's good for Klal Yisrael. But it's good for the old me. Through 515 times of asking you, I've changed myself 515 different ways. Maybe Epis, now it is good for me to go in. Maybe the new me Epis, it is good for Klal Yisrael for me to lead them in. And if the answer is still no, I accept it. I surrender to it. I submit to you. Whatever you decide and whatever you determine. But the whole process and exercise of tefillah is, I'm a new me. If you've davened and you haven't transformed, you haven't davened. I'm not saying give it up. We still do it. Not every davening is going to be the highest level. Sometimes we could daven a whole month just for that one breakthrough tefillah. But had we not kept opening the siddur the whole month, we never would have gotten to that breakthrough. So you have to keep davening no matter what. But the level we're yearning and searching for, the one we want to be on, the metric or measure every time we close the siddur about that tefillah is to ask ourselves, Am I changed? Am I different? Have I been transformed by what I just did? Did I have an intimate rendezvous with the Almighty? Was it real? Was it raw? Was it authentic? Did I talk to him? Did I hear him talking to me? Am I changed? Am I transformed by it? And if we want a new determination, a new judgment, then we have to become a new person. Because if we're the old person, we're not just going to bribe Hashem. He's not just going to look the other way. And we don't want him to. We don't want him to. Because remember, he's a satellite in the sky and we can only see what's right in front of us. And if there's a choice between the two, we'll always or should always defer to him. So we don't want him to. The only time we really even want him to is because we're different, we're new, we're changed, we're transformed. And that's what tefillah is all about. It's an exercise in emunah, in faith, transforming ourselves. It is introduced. The assumption, the presumption is, you're in charge, you're in control, it is by definition good. And whatever you determine, whatever the outcome, I surrender to you that it is good. But Hashem, maybe consider a new outcome because I'm a new person. Maybe we could change. Now, how does that work when you daven for someone else? Maybe they're still the same person, so why should Hashem listen to you to help them if they're still the same? How should it help to daven for someone else? That's a good question, which maybe we'll pick up with next time. We'll end here. We continue when we turn the recording off. We continue with live questions and answers for those who come in person. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy. We'll pick up with next week.